And still had a mask on, too.
Yeah, there was some questionable shit there, man. But again, I could go on about that forever. What else we got, guys? We need to kill some time. This isn't this working out the way I thought it would.
I got Easy Rider, you know, Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, I saw that too.
1969.
I was going to say that one, but I don't know enough about it.
I've never seen really the film, but I've seen that bike at plenty of like fairs and shit like that. And
oh, they actually have the bike?
Oh, it's like a, no, it's not the original. Replica. It's like a replica. Yeah, like a touring replica. But nonetheless, it's pretty badass. I mean, I have no place on a motorcycle. It's just not me. And if I did get on one, people would be laughing.
Especially not a chopper. I just don't understand.
It would look so unnatural. Yeah. So unnatural. But
I quit riding one after I slid one in gravel. So after that, I can't do it anymore.
No. My dad got one. And I went over to his house and he took me down to the basement because there's my bike. I was like, oh, cool. He said, you want to get on? No. Nope, we're done. Cool bike. Let's go back upstairs. You know, that's not a question I need answered. Am I going to go in the ditch or not? I can tell you what'll happen. Yep. I'm going in the ditch. How about the Tron bikes?
Oh, that's what I was. Oh, yeah, I was thinking about that one.
I picked a good one now. Yeah. Good. Okay. I found a well of conversation.
The Tron Legacy or the original bikes?
Well, they obviously look better in Legacy, I think. But, you know, we've talked before in Grand Theft Auto V, they put that whole mode in there.
Oh, that's
Tron
right.
Bike battle modes.
Yeah.
My God, is that fun? Yeah, like, I kept seeing those movies growing up. You know, I know there's been video game adaptations dating back probably to the Atari, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But it's never intrigued me. I was like, it looks fucking boring.
It's always just been top down with a big long tail.
Yes.
You didn't really get to.
But this was intense.
Yeah.
Like, I got into it and couldn't quit playing it. I eventually did, obviously. But, yeah, I'd like to actually look back into that because that was so much fun.
I forgot about those.
Man, the matches were quick. I mean, you make a few walls and then you're, like, darting around to, like, avoid stuff.
And the wall stayed long, too, so you really had to figure out where you were going before. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got Lobo.
Oh, dude, I was going to say Lobo.
Oh, the main man.
Yes, now that's a cool ass bike. That dude can just cruise around space and do whatever he wants, right?
Yeah.
I wonder about the person who's able to breathe in outer space. You know, what does that mean when they come into like Earth's atmosphere? Do they just explode? I mean, what happens?
Big breath of relief when you finally, I'm tired of holding my breath.
You see Lobo in like comics and in like cartoons, he's like talking and conversing with people in space. Like,
I think it'd be like being in a really smoky room where you walk outside and you're just like, oh, all right, there you go. I mean, you can function while you're in that smoky room, but it's just not as well. But once you get outside in the fresh air, then
if you're Lobo, big, of course.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Are they making a Lobo movie? Is this still happening?
I've always heard rumors here and there, but
it floats around ever since I think we started this show.
Yeah.
Which is, we're going on 5 years now, if that tells you anything. But the same thing with the Venom movie. You know, that was in rumor mill for a long time before it came to fruition.
Well, that could be DC's Deadpool, you know, and outer space. I think that could really.
Boy, that's a good point.
They'd probably kill that easy, too.
If they just took some lesson, I don't know. What was the last one they did, DC?
Justice League?
Was there not something that? Oh, I'm thinking of Shazam. That looks promising.
Yeah,
it does.
It's like they have found their footwork with that one.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope so. It looks like they're taking kind of the Guardian more comedy element to it than, you know, just. I'm sure when
changing the movie type with the character type, basically.
Yeah, when it comes down to brass tacks and shit gets serious, it'll be action packed. But
I have a question about Shazam because when I was a kid, I would read like old copies that were my uncle's or something, and I never took him to be a kid in a man's body. Is that how he is in the comics?
Yeah,
I don't.
So far as I remember,
the original ones, I don't think it was. Then they changed it somewhere else down the line.
Yeah, I've never read like Golden or Silver Age, any of that kind of stuff. I can't remember.
If you read him currently, he is or is not?
He is.
I thought he was
for a while. He's been just a kid that turns into a big kid.
Did you read Kingdom Come?
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh, that's this future DC series that was illustrated by Alex Ross, all paintings. There's a real nice reveal in there when the Shazam. I don't know. You got to read it, but it has something to do with that character aging, and he actually grows into that body, I think. And it's, if I'm remembering it right.
Wow,
it is. That is one of the. That is so freaking powerful. That whole series, Kingdom Come. I mean, just the trade. Yeah, I got it.
I've even heard of that.
It's good they finally made him grow up, because that'd just be like...
That offers interesting questions, though. So as he ages, does the alter ego age as well?
Yeah. No, it's a really... I don't want to give it away. And I don't... I just remember that being this pivotal moment, like, wow. And yeah, I'd have to read it again, because I don't even remember specifically what the reveal was. I just remember the way it was illustrated was so fantastic. And I remember Superman just saying, like, calling his bluff and, like, saying, hello, Billy. I don't know. It was great.
Oh, man. You've got me hooked. That sounds awesome. Kingdom Come.
Yes. Yes.
Crazy if he was an old man and then calls out Shazam and then turns back into a young guy.
Right.
You've read Marvels, right?
Read what?
Marvels, the painted Alex Ross, Kurt Busiek.
No.
Busiek. Oh, boy. That's a good one, too. I'm sorry. We're getting off topic here.
This is the point, man. Yeah. This is the point.
That's how we do.
Yeah. I guess when did these come out? Probably 90s, late 90s. Whenever Alex Ross was really starting to hit the scene. I mean, these were some of his first things.
I'll need to dig out. I know, Jack, you and I both ordered a handful of Shazam books that I think date late 80s, early 90s. We ordered them because Fritz the Night Owl, someone we've had on, was illustrated in multiple issues. And I feel like in those, he was still being Billy Batson, right?
I know. I did a comic vault with one of them a while ago, but he was Shazam the whole time. He never
transformed.
They never talked about him. Because
wasn't that thing was like a race between him or him and Superman or some shit like
him
that?
Him and Superman were caught in a snowstorm or something like that. It was real. Yeah, it was something. I can't remember. It was a real bad snowstorm, but Superman didn't have much power.
All the shit they can handle, but when it comes to some snow, buddy.
Yeah.
They're fucked.
They're wearing tights. It's cold.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I'll have to dig those out and take a look.
All right. Let me see here. I'll list one more, and I wouldn't even call him a badass, but when I was looking around online, I was like, oh my God, I forgot about this dude. Remember Ralph S. Mouse? Ralph, the mouse in the motorcycle.
The Biker Mice from Mars?
No, when we were kids, the book that they used to like bring into school, or they show you the special, the little tiny mouse that had the toy motorcycle, when he got on it, would make that meh noise, the bike would go. And it was, the whole book was about the apartment he lived in had a sick boy that for some reason this mouse cared about. And two full stories down was the pill he needed to be better. So the mouse took the motorcycle down to get it and bring it back, because his poor ass mother couldn't afford meds, I guess. But I can't believe nobody remembers that. Ted,
I don't remember that.
Mouse
at all.
And motorcycle? No.
I'm sorry to say.
Wow. Son of a bitch.
Maybe it's that little bit of the age difference there.
I don't think so, because I think by the time we got to it, it was still it was older. Like, I feel like it dated like late 70s, early 80s, maybe. I'll have to go back and look.
Unless it's a regional thing, because I was in California for most of my school.
Could be. Ted has no excuse.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, let's just do a quick commercial here. We have t-shirts. We have decals, we have mugs, we have koozies. What else we got, Jack?
Coasters.
Crap.
Beach towels.
With our name and our tower and our logo and our can and all that shit on there.
Nice white items with red radio towers on them.
If you need more white and red in your life, society6.com/CandairePod is the place to be, apparently. Head over there, get yourself a t-shirt, a mug, a decal, rep your podcast, and support us at the same time.
You could get the beach towel, tie it around your neck, and be a superhero.
There you go. As long as it's all you're doing, if you tie it around your neck, don't go like
climb fences or nothing.
I'm thinking autoerotic fixation, but so that's where my mind goes. Society6.com/CandairePod. Go get some moich. All right, with that, let's swing open the door to the comic vault. Jack, I'm dying to know what that comic over there is about.
All right, from Marvel back in... Shoot, I don't even know. I thought I saw the date on there, but I don't think it's a date.
This is like the What If series that Marvel does, but they're called What The than What If. And I've never opened a What The. I've read plenty of What Ifs.
From 1990.
Okay.
Basically, it is Marvel's Mad Magazine.
Okay.
The way I put it together, or thought about it. There's about three or four different stories in here, but I picked the one about Wolverine. On the cover of him, he's actually yelling at a bunch of other heroes in Galactus, and I guess they're fighting for the cover, but he says, "Back off, hosers. I get the cover. It's in my contract."
The comic is all about fighting for the cover of the comic that you're reading?
Well, the cover of the book is. That's what the cover is signifying.
Oh, just, I see.
But the story I picked is called Logan's Claws, part 1 of 8.5, Gone Fishing. Logan's on a little island fishing. He's got a fishing line tied to one of his claws with the bobber in the water. Sitting around him are a bunch of signs that says, "No hero here," trying to deter anyone from coming around. Basically, he's tired of being put in other people's comics to save their comic and make them money.
Wow.
That was the 90s, all right, man.
And throughout the comic, he gets, you know, a bunch of different heroes. Some of them, I don't even think they're actual heroes. They start chasing them. It's almost like A Hard Day's Night, the Beatles movie.
Right.
Them getting chased, them wanting him to be in the comic. And I think it's funny because this one guy, if you look at his helmet, it looks a little familiar, huh? And I looked at the artist and I don't recognize his name.
It definitely looks familiar. It looks He-Man almost.
Doesn't it look like a Ninja Turtle?
Oh my god!
It's exactly a Ninja Turtle. I don't know if he was an artist that worked on the Turtles at all during that.
Who is it?
I'll have to look in there. But he ends up, yeah, he's getting chased by a bunch of heroes. One hero group called the New Kids on the Block.
That's got to be coincidence, because that's the only square you see that. I'm sorry to keep our listeners oblivious. What we're looking at here is Jack has handed me this comic, and this one character is in an action pose coming down toward the camera, I guess, the panel. And the way he's positioned, the way his helmet's coming down the top of his head looks exactly like the head of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle drawn back in the days.
Ones,
yep. Yeah. Like line for
line. Exactly like it, yeah.
I can't believe you noticed that.
I was sitting looking at it, and I was like, who is that guy? And I was like, wait a minute. Who's the artist on here? It is artist Rurik Tyler.
I can't speak to this.
Yeah, I don't know if he did any art. But yeah, one of the hero teams that come up and start talking to him about being in the comic is called the New Kids on the Block. He dices them up. And there's another bunch of female heroes that are saying, "Oh, no, we got an appointment with you at 1 o'clock to be in our book. Oh, no, you got to be 1 o'clock." And he's running away. Finally, at the end, I think there are a couple of Marvel execs at the time. And he comes running in the office and they're like, "Oh, how was your vacation?" And he was just like, "You bunch of jerks, you know, I'm tired of being all these other people's comics." And he's about ready to chop them up when all of a sudden you hear, "Excuse me, I just got hired." And it's a female Wolverine. And she says, "Yeah, I'm your cousin, Wolverina."
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, you don't even have to look at the copyright date on this to know it's 90s. Look at these drawings, man.
But it was so muscles! Far out there, yeah.
Yeah, those are fun, though.
That's it. What the...
Did you get that at Columbus this year?
Yep.
Maybe I did pick one up. Maybe I did pick one up, and I just forgot. When you said him sitting on an island fishing, I just thought of the Death of Wolverine series, where that started with him being on an island, secluding himself because his powers were diminishing, and starts with this guy crawling up on the shore. I don't know, he had like some kind of patriot-looking outfit on. He was there to kill him. I'm here to kill the legendary Wolverine. And as quickly as he thinks it, Wolverine kills him, and you just look up the beach and see all these dead bodies of people who have came up trying to take out the Wolverine.
Maybe that's where they got the idea from there.
Could be. Could be.
What the?
Very good. All right, Ted, what do you got for us today?
Well, I wanted to stick with the motorcycle theme, so I did pick the Batman Judge Dredd Judgment on Gotham. Do we know this?
I've heard of it. Was this a an IDW or a?
It was a crossover where, you know, it's the first time Batman and Judge Dredd meet, you know, across company lines, I guess.
The publisher, though, I guess, was it IDW?
It says DC on the cover.
Oh, wow, okay.
Fleetway would have been the publisher for Judge Dredd, but they're not really listed as a publisher on this. It is written by Alan Grant and John Wagner, and the artist is Simon Bisley, who I love his stuff. Got to meet him at a Motor City Con a couple years ago. He did a cool Apama pinup for us, which I still have yet
Wow.
Do you know who Bisley is? He did the first Lobo series as well, as did Alan Grant as the writer. Anyway, the premise is, you know, we're in Gotham City and Judge Death. Do we know who Judge Death is?
I don't.
Mm-mm. That name sounds familiar, but I don't.
Okay, he's Dredd's nemesis. He's sort of like this this spirit, evil spirit that kind of possesses people and becomes them. But he's it's almost like a judge with like a skull face kind of, and the helmet too, though. You know, so
like an evil doppelganger, if you will.
Yeah, right on.
I've seen him before.
Okay, so we're in Gotham. And he's starting to kill some people, Judge Death, and Batman accidentally kills Judge Death, impales him on a fence, but then he comes to life, escapes, and there's something left behind, and Batman, you know, he's like, what's this thing? It's some sort of electronic device. He taps it, and then all of a sudden he's in, you know, Mega City. That is Judge Dredd's world, right? Yeah, Mega City 1.
I have no idea.
Okay, so he's in this whole other dimension, and it's all futuristic, and he's like, what's going on? Am I losing my sanity? And then Mean Machine, this other villain of Dredd's, is asking what happened to my dimension-jumping device. You know?
Right.
So, and it was left back in Gotham. He doesn't have it. So anyway, Batman and this guy get into a fight, and at some point, I'm kind of paging through it, reminding myself.
Fine. Take your time.
Yeah. Dredd is called in, and he takes Batman down and brings him into custody. And, you know, Dredd, of course, you know, on Mega City 1, the judges are, there is no jury, right? That's what a judge does. They pretty much make up their mind on the spot whether you are innocent or guilty.
Right.
And, you know, he's like, I'll just read from it here. You know, Batman's tied up to a chair and he's like, I've put up with this third degree long enough. I've committed no crime. And then Dredd's like, no. Incendiary device, phosphor based, 30 meters high tensile wire, darts two tipped with tranquilizer, projectiles, precision weighted two. Knockout gas, you're carrying enough offensive weapons to pull down 15 years. And Bruce Wayne, because he's unmasked here, don't be absurd. No court of the law would convict me. Then Dredd, this is Mega City 1. I am the law. Judge, if I say you pull time, you pull time. And then this other good cop comes in and Bruce Wayne's like, is there anyone I could speak to with a shred of intelligence? And it's great. You know, of course he gets free and then they one of the things that's terrific about it is Judge Death meets the Scarecrow and they hit it off, you know, and they're just creating this really artistic kills, you know, just for the fun of it in a way. And then at some point the Scarecrow poisons Judge Death and there's like this, you know, one can only imagine what, you know, and Judge Death is writhing in pain. Like what a creature like Judge Death would be seeing that would cause him to, you know, such a nefarious mind. And right. Then you flip the page and it's like all these cute stuffed animals, you know, and like this unicorn floating in the air. Like, oh, it's so great. And I won't give away the rest of it, but it is one of my all time favorites. It's so freaking good. And it's kind of one of these books that I don't think a lot of people even maybe know it exists. And you can still pick it up sometimes in sort of the budget bins. Like I just got another copy myself for like $2 at the last show I was at.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that would be worth looking into, especially if you're going on about it. I've read crossovers before, and I guess I went to IDW first because most of which I've read have been on that publishing title. I love IDW personally.
Yeah.
But one they did was the crossover with the Turtles and Ninja Turtles and Batman. And I waited for them all to come out, and I got the trade. I wanted to sit down and do it all in one read. And, you know, here are two people that I would, you know, nerdgasm to see fight. The Shredder and Batman. Two of the most elite fighters you can think of from throughout pop culture. Who's, you know, how are they going to go down? And, of course, they don't let that fight play out. It happens, but as quick as it starts, it ends, and you never really see it. And I wasn't too bowled over by it. It had redeeming qualities to it, but as a whole, it sounds like this Judge Dredd and Batman would be much better.
That Dredd and Batman, that's back when Batman had the giant pointy ears, wasn't it?
Let me see.
Yes. Yeah, Bisley did it that way, and it's really, I think it looks great. I mean, it's just badass.
Yeah, see, these I like. There was a time, and I'd have to look to see who the artist was, but The Batman art was so obscure. You know, those are long, but they at least they stay symmetrical with each other. They go up and they stay straight. The ones I seen, they would go up and like
they
arch inward,
curve forward,
and cross each other. That, yeah. Even like they looked ridiculous. Even
this
more
whole
so
book,
than that.
Yeah,
this whole book is painted. You know, I mean, it's every panel. It's like
what
it's
pulling up here is beautiful.
Yeah,
even that one's good.
Oh, wow.
They're
look
real
at that.
Long, but it's at least they're straight.
I know. That is cool. I like that Batman. But I'll dig out some of the examples I'm thinking of sometime, and I'll keep them out for you to see.
Oh, I know exactly which ones you're talking about. I hated those. Yeah.
The stories were good. The stories in them were amazing, which is what kind of pissed me off, because the art, you know, you had to kind of swallow like a horse-sized pill or something. Like, really hard to get down sometimes, but... Very good. Very good. Oh, and that was just Batman meets Judge Dredd. What was the title of that again?
It's called Judgment on Gotham.
Judgment on Gotham. Sounds awesome. Awesome. All right. So what I have this week is not even a comic that is out to read yet. It's on Kickstarter right now. It's a comic called Suncatcher. And it's done by Jose, I'm going to butcher this last name, Pimenta. Written and illustrated by Jose Pimenta. I think that's it. And it's running till October 25th. But what this book is about is it's set in Mexicali, Mexico in the early 2000s. And there's a big music scene happening down there. And it's about this girl who finds... She's a musician. And she finds that her dead grandfather's soul is stuck in this guitar. And so the comic is her trying to, one, save her grandfather, get his soul out of this guitar, and two, just make music. And I'm a guitar player personally, so this kind of jumped right off the page and into my attention. Like, that's cool. I like the idea of a possessed guitar. That sounds awesome. But the art looked really cool. I don't, Ted, maybe you know a term for this where someone who's painting a panel chooses maybe only four colors to use. So like in this panel, the character, like her shirt and pants are going to be the exact same color orange to contrast like the wall in the background that's covered in posters, which would typically have tons of detail, but is just a flat like blue, say. You know what I'm talking about?
I do, but I wouldn't know a term necessarily.
But I'm displaying, you guys know what kind of art style I am talking about though, right? So I love the way it looks in that aspect. And for anyone who would consider backing it, the book's finished. It just, they need the money to start producing it. So quick turnaround time if you do decide to back the Kickstarter. Again,
that's always nice.
Yeah, it makes such a difference. Mm-hmm. Like, not the, you know, and I've backed projects on the other side. Well, we need all this money to start, you know, where it's probably going to be a few years out. I get that. I totally get that. But yeah, it's much easier to click that donate button for something that's finished and just goes right into production. So again, Suncatcher, running till October 25th on Kickstarter. Check it out. We'll have links on the website and on Twitter. All right. And with that, let's turn our attention over to Ted Sikora and talk about the Tap Dance Killer. Ted, one, I want to thank you again for being back with us today. This has been a lot of fun thus far. And two, I've got to know more about this tap dance killer. It looks amazing. What can you tell us?
Oh, Tap Dance Killer. Well, it's a spinoff of our Apama, the Undiscovered Animal series. And I guess if I tell it in order, in case somebody doesn't know what Apama is, which...
What the heck is an Apama?
Apama is the story of a guy, a Hungarian ice cream truck driver in Cleveland, who unlocks the spirit force of the most savage creature mankind has never known and becomes Cleveland's own bumbling superhero. And in issue 10, he meets a woman who is putting flyers up for a musical. Her name is Nikki St. Clair, and she, you know, she hails the ice cream truck, you know, just as she's doing that, and she's like, here, take a flyer. And they're kind of flirty with each other, and he decides to go to this audition to see if he can get her digits. And they really hit it off, and they are casting a freak. The musical that they're putting on is called Nothing Like Vaudeville. It's like this horror show musical. They're looking for a person to play the lead role, which is like this freak. And our main character, Ilya, the ice cream truck driver / superhero Apama, is pretty adept at doing this bizarre pose in the audition, and he's cast as the freak. So Nikki St. Clair is cast as a tap dance killer. Another guy, Vincent Reed, is cast as Sir Terror. And then there's a third character, Claus Miragold, who is cast as Fletcher, this necrophiliac wax museum curator. So there is something that happens where the three villains get locked into the headspace of their roles, and they start taking on the actual mafia, like this strange, bizarre vaudeville troupe, and Apama has to intervene. So what happened with Tap Dance Killer, though, images of her on our Facebook page were being liked and shared, you know, thousands of times. And, you know, it was at New York Comic Con, actually, and people were just coming by the booth with a very different reaction to her than we were getting. We had a nice reaction for Apama, but there was something special about her. Like, everybody was like, who is this? Who is this? Who is this? And I said, you know, I'm going to give her own spinoff, because it really ends in a – the way the series ends with Apama is sort of ending on a sort of strange beginning. So Tap Dance Killer is the story of Nikki St. Clair, you know, and we describe it as sort of Punisher meets the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
This was such a not a relief. I was excited to see – that when you sent this along, you know, the art and the style of it looked very much the same as Apama. And I was telling Jack, I really hope these play into the same universe. And then to find out they, in fact, do. You know, and I was going to ask, why did you choose her of all the, you know, the other characters to come through the Apama storyline? But it seems like you were getting good feedback from her, and that's what spurred you to do that. So you say Punisher meets who again? I'm sorry?
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Rocky Horror Picture Show. So in her own arc, what is she going to, is she going to play, just, you're just going to see the villain perspective, or is she going to turn to the anti-hero? What's the long-term plan for this character?
So when we start, she is in prison, and, you know, because I told you they were taking on the mafia, and she took out some mobsters, and she is in prison for shooting people. and she's marked in prison. You know, they, you know, you can't take out the Romero family, and you're toast. So she has to escape, which she does, and then she gets back together with her two allies from the musical who have continued this crime thing. So Sir Terror and Fletcher. And Fletcher has started working on sort of this, well, I should say, in the musical Nothing Like Vaudeville, the Fletcher character can bring the dead to life. And this guy is doing everything he can to create that in reality. And it's, he's got these strange characters that he's sort of developing himself. So they're putting this kind of bizarre vaude villain, we call them the vaude villains, the super team together. And they're just creating all kinds of problems for, you know, what is the normal crime scene in Cleveland. And so you're seeing Nikki, you know, really comfortable in the role, but she's also having problems with her personal life, you know, kind of rectifying the difference between who she, so she's a wanted person, you know, she can't go out in public, but she's this amazing actress. So she's taking on personas all over the city that allow her to go anywhere but infiltrate, you know, the mob or, you know, the seedy side of town where she can find out all kinds of information. And
the next level of method acting.
Oh, totally. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I always say that. That's part of my pitch. She's like this method actor to the nth degree, you know.
I get it is more of a, it does take the anti-hero kind of route. I mean, she is going after bigger bad people than herself, it seems like.
Yeah, it's, well, and there again, people ask me, is she a good guy or a bad guy? And I just say, exactly.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
It's like a bad person doing good things.
Well, you just leave it to the reader. You leave it to the
yeah, I don't want it to be, I what I like about this series so far is it's villains versus villains, you know, and
right.
You know, and a lot of the feedback, I mean, we've gotten some really terrific reviews on it. I'm happy to say they kind of dig that vibe that it's very, hard to pin down as far as like, you know,
what you should feel about this character.
Maybe. Yeah. That'd probably be the way to put it. Yep.
I mean, that's just kind of where I go. I mean, it's a weird thing. It's something I never even realized, but every time I see her, I was like, so what is she? Is she good? Is she bad? Is she happy? Is she sad? What is it? You know, so that's offers the intrigue to the character.
Makes it a little better because really like you get that. To make up your own mind instead of reading about someone that's inherently good all the time.
Yeah, instead of being told, you make your own conclusions. Yep. I like that. And I also like that you're expanding the Sapama universe. Yes. So to my knowledge, this is the first branch, a first extension to the universe. Do you plan other characters, other extensions?
Yes, and we're quite far along, I'm happy to say, on Bloom. And that, in Apama 5, we introduced sort of the nemesis of that series. Her name is Regina, and she is this hippie, psychedelic flower child cult leader who has, you know, within our first 11 issues, created all kinds of problems for Apama. And before we even put her into the comics, I wrote an entire screenplay about her origin, you know, because it just came to me so fast, this character. Like, I wanted a very powerful kind of female. She's not a witch, but, you know, I feel like witch characters are so overdone, and they're always sort of this ancient spirit force. But I wanted somebody who was really like a hippie, you know, like a 60s hippie that maybe regards everything about our society as sort of a sham, you know, and maybe she's even right about all that, you know, and so she's got these followers, and there's a very specific reason why she needs to be Apama's enemy. And that's all going to be revealed in Bloom, and it's being illustrated by Butch Mappa, and he's already through about 50 pages of it, but I think I'm going to release it in 3 issues. Issue 1 will be 40 pages, and then there'll be 2 like 30 pagers, and then we'll do a whole collection. And I'm not sure yet on the date. I really want to – I kind of like to see the whole thing with this maybe before we put out pieces of it. You know, it's sometimes you want to go back and change an outfit or something. I'm just not sure, you know.
Right, absolutely. A character with a negative societal view. Now, that's a character I can get behind. A character I can relate to. You know what I'm saying?
Right on.
But you'll have to let us know when that's coming to fruition. We'll have you back on and talk more about that. But as for Tap Dance Killer, is this available for the public?
It's stores across the country, yeah. Fantastic. Talk to your local comic shop. Actually, Apama now comes out in single issues, too. And we are up to issue 4 that just came out this past Wednesday. And it will be the series going forward. So right now, if you have the 2 Apama collections, you're up to Apama 11. But this will be going into 12s, 13s, 14s, and then we'll do a new collection. We'll actually do things the right way, where the single issues come out before. But we had to do it this way because the reason when we put out Tap Dance Killer number one, we thought, you know, we've never put out a Palma number one. It just, there's no such thing as that. We want that. We're huge comic geeks. And
sure.
So we remastered it, and people are always asking me, so is this a reprint? I'm like, well, it kind of is a reprint, but at the same time, this is the series as it will continue. So if you wanted a Palma number one, this is a Palma number one. It doesn't exist anywhere else. And
it's a number one first printing, even though it's a reprint.
Yeah, so it's weird. I don't know what to say about that. Or, you know, it's not a specific, you know, 5 years from now, are people going to remember that the trades came out first?
You know, I don't know. You can look at it different. I see what you're totally saying. The comic nerd in you wants to have a number one of your character out there. I totally get it. But on the turn side, you know, like I was saying earlier in the episode with the Turtles and the Batman book, this is something I was anticipating. And I didn't want to take, you know, one piece at a time.
Waited until
I wanted to sit down and devour it all in one sitting. So that's definitely a strong benefit I think any trade has going for it, is a full-rounded story rather than just a hook to get somebody irritated. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I think with indies like ourselves, it's harder, I think, to get people to take that whole bite on a trade that they barely heard of, you know, so... It's nice to have both.
There's something about Opama, man. I don't know what it is about that character that speaks to me, but I dig the way he looks. He's a cool kid. I like, I don't know, I haven't read all of it, but if I remember correctly, he's kind of an insecure dude, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's to me, the hook with Opama is this is the guy who's like, you know, the dude down the street that isn't, you know, he's not brilliant like Peter Parker, right? Yeah,
exactly.
He's certainly not wealthy. He's got no Avenger buddies. He's got to figure it all out himself, and he's just not very bright.
You just described me, is what you described. So, you know, that's why I can relate to this character. He looks amazing. And I got to say, too, your merch line is fantastic. I still wear my Opama shirt all the freaking time. And I love sometimes getting looks on people's face like, what's that? You know, and I
thank you.
Ask me what it is. You know,
so it's again, a very hard thing to explain.
Oh, but he's got such a cool look. It's intriguing. I was telling Jack before we got on the call here. You don't, when you look at him, you don't know whether to be like, okay, the hero's here, or like a bit frightened by him, like kind of like a Tap Dance Killer, I guess. That's a good thing you have going, that aura around your characters where it's up to the
unsuredness.
Reader. Yeah, no specific definition to them. It's up to the reader to make their own definition. I dig that a lot.
Oh, thanks. I think that's true of life, you know. I think everybody's...
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, everybody's got a little bit of both, or, you know, every villain's the hero in their story, that all that jazz.
Sure. It's just nice to have something... You know, with the hero genres being as prominent and as popular as they are, and they remain to be for years, these past years, something not so black and white, not here's your hero, here's your villain, let's see how the hero takes the villain down. You know, is this side good or bad, or is this side good or bad? Who knows? Anything could happen.
Right on.
I dig that. So to our listeners, head over to apomination.com to...
We actually have a new website. The name of our company is Hero Tomorrow Comics, so it's just herotomorrow.com. That takes you to our... that's our page.
All right. I'm writing that down. I was not aware. And what about... does Hero Tomorrow have a Twitter handle?
Yeah. Well, it would just be me, Ted Sikora, TEDSIKORA. And then we do have a Facebook page, which gets most of the news. You know, that's just Hero Tomorrow on Facebook.
Okay. Awesome. Well, we will be tagging you and posting all about this on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all said social. I don't need to list them. Social media, right?
Yeah.
So, Ted, thanks so much again for being here and sharing these awesome stories with us, man.
Well, thank you, guys. Enjoyed it quite a bit.
That is good to hear. Jack, what do we have on the website?
On our website, you can go to cannedairpodcast.com and check out our special guests, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, check out some of the videos on our YouTube page, click on the merch button, click on the Patreon button. and click on the contacts button if you want to send us an email and say hi.
That's all it is. Click a button and say, hey, what? Mm-hmm. You don't even have to click a button. I think if you get on our website, there's a little stalker box there. It's like, hey, what's up? Yeah. What you doing? Why are you here?
Yeah.
Not creepy.
Sure is. Not on the mobile app, but it's on the desktop app.
On the desktop, right. You can find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and on Instagram at Canned_Air. A lot of funny things happening there. Show links, current episodes, past episodes. Jake's warped and funny sense of humor.
Yeah.
You gotta love it.
It's been bleeding onto the Facebook page too a little
bit. It's been bleeding all through this show. Where it's been bleeding. And that's a good thing, I think. But what else we got? Patreon, Jake. I think Jack already said that, didn't you?
Wizard World.
WizardWorld.com. Promo box. Canned air, no space. Cool. 10% off.
Cool.
Cool. Because it is cool, isn't it, Jack?
Especially outside.
I'm pandering now. Let's just end this crap. Until next time, I'm Jeremy Collins.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Ted Sikora.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Is hilarious.
Oh no!
Gotcha!
Wow, Buzz Lightyear saved your life.
I'm not Buzz Lightyear.
If it hadn't been for Buzz, my goose would have been cooked.
I'm not Buzz Lightyear.
Thanks, Mr. Lightyear.
I am not
Buzz Lightyear.
Excuse me. They just sent me over.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.